Hi, everyone, and welcome to another Sunday Roast. We're back with two wonderful guests once again. Lisa, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm Lisa Burton. I'm a British migrant living in Spain. I'm a campaigner. I'm vice chair of citizens' rights group Remain in Spain. I'm also a council representative on the National Executive of European Movement UK. I write for the Bylines, and currently I am doing a podcast with the National Rejoin March and Peter Corr called Rejoin Rants.
Fantastic. It's great to have you back once again.
Thank
Aid,
you.
Great to see you once again. Can you tell us a bit about yourself for anyone who's new to the show?
Sure. I'm Aid Thompson. You probably most frequently find me on Twitter or TikTok or YouTube. I've moved more aggressively into of late. I am, let's encapsulate it all by saying I'm an all-round internet bastard.
Perfect. Alex, can you tell us a bit about yourself for anyone who's new to the podcast?
Hi, I'm Alex, also known as Political X. I am a historian, a journalist, and a YouTuber. And my wonderful co-host, Max.
My name is Max. I run the Robespierre channel, where I talk about British politics and Brexit in particular. Alex, our first topic of today.
Who would you rather have in power, Reform or the Tories? Lisa. Yeah, you have to choose one.
Oh, I mean, that's a terrible choice, isn't it?
That's like choose your abuser. That's like...
It is like choose your abuser. I think Reform wouldn't last in power. That would be the thing. I mean, it's all their policies. They just could never, you know, they could never put in place. If you've seen their little manifesto, I suppose. But I can't answer that question because they're both about as bad as each other at the moment. And certainly the Tories want to be Reform. You know, so it's only the checks and balances of our institutions of parliament that are kind of holding them back, which would hold Reform back as well, you would hope. So I'm going to say Reform, because I think at least it would expose the fact that they're all scoundrels and chancers, and they would be absolutely useless. And I just think that the vast majority of the British public don't agree with their policies anyway. So I think it would just create such an uproar. The Tories are a little bit more respected. They've got that traditional voter base. And, you know, the old people might not vote for them at the moment because they're a little bit disgusted, but they will certainly come back and vote for them again. So I think, yeah, at the moment.
Horrible scenario. Hopefully that can't happen. Aid?
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm so pleased that you didn't ask me this question first so I could have, like, you know, a minute, 2 minutes to really consider the option. But even with the 2 minutes to consider the options, I'm still like, oh, wow. I mean, yes. Yeah, so, OK, just to expand on earlier points. So the Conservative Party have the apparatus. They've got relationships. They're familiar with governing. So you would think they would be the better of the two. Then again, if Reform are a sort of upstart challenger and they're not tempered by tradition and it's always been like this, like, it's possible that there could be some benefits to getting a fresh pair of eyes on things. Maybe if Reform are funded largely by Richard Tice, there wouldn't be that, like, the governing party wouldn't be so in hoc to that kind of donor whip structure. That could be good. But ultimately, as we get closer to the general election and the poll gap between the two of them continues to collapse, and I think they'll be neck and neck, like, in the next 2-3 weeks now, then the Tories will gradually basically become Reform for fear of being wiped out by Reform. So it's kind of, doesn't matter which one, like, you're going to end up with a Refory party, basically, like a mesh of both of them.
Max?
I like how James O'Brien described them as the reflux party. They're like the Brexit reflux party. I actually think the Tories would be better because when it comes to Reform UK, first of all, when it comes to the general election, it's the Prime Minister who decides when the general election is. So can you imagine if Richard Tice or Nigel Farage was Prime Minister, they would say, yeah, we're going to stay here until the very end. There are some decent people in the Conservative Party. There are one or two, but I can't think of any decent people within Reform UK. And then also, Reform UK don't want to win. They don't want power. It's about influence. Yeah. So they want to push the Tories further to the right. I keep saying on my channel about how it's about pushing right-wing economic policies and using the wokeness or the cultural war or climate change or ULEZ or whatever as a vehicle to achieve that. So it's all about pushing the Conservatives further to the right economically, which I think Reform UK want to achieve. So, and also Reform are like hecklers at a comedy club. You know, they're not going to get up on stage and tell jokes because they're not capable. So it'd be like it's a terrible choice, but the Conservatives would be probably better, but the choice is terrible anyway. And yourself, Alex?
I'd want to go for the one that wouldn't last, would that would last the least longest, if that makes sense. So it would probably be Reform. They'd collapse. We've had governments in the past that have done that very rapidly. Well, we all lived through it with Liz Truss. They collapsed pretty rapidly,
But
and
they didn't call a general election.
no, they didn't. But I think Reform, if they were to collapse that quickly, they would call a general election. I don't think they've got anyone in the party that could take over. I can't imagine Lee Anderson sort of stepping into the frame and running government after Richard Tice's collapse. Like, I just don't see they've got the capability. So on that.
Oh, no, I was just going to say my fear is, so I agree, I could see them collapsing if they ever were fortunate or unfortunate enough to actually get power. But my fear would be, who are they going to take down with them when that happens? Because, I mean, a lot of what they do in the media is about heckling the Tories. It's about making a big song and dance over, like, stop the boats and all that stuff. There's a lot of previous social media activity from a lot of their prospective candidates where they are talking about, like, deportation of immigrants and that sort of, like, there's a lot of that stuff. But when you start to look at their other policies, like, they are going to use the billions that they will save by no longer paying the interest on the quantitative easing debt with the Bank of England. They're going to
To
just
fund the NHS.
stop paying that and then use that money for public services. And I'm like, I mean, what do they think is going to happen to the currency, to bonds, to pensions? Like, we've all lived through that whole Truss period. We're all familiar with what that did to pensions and mortgages. I mean, if those guys got in and enacted that kind of economic vandalism, it would be like Truss 2.0.
It crashed the country, I mean, pretty much within a few months. But we're really lucky. It's a hypothetical question because this ain't going to happen because of the absolutely shit voting system we have in the UK. First past the post, it's just not going to happen. So, yeah, it's easy to kind of joke and laugh about it, isn't it? But it's not going to be a reality, thank God.
Well, just to, like, whilst we're on the subject, so, like, with the polling collapsing between the two of them, so I think they will be neck and neck, right? Next 2 or 3 weeks, because nothing's getting better for the Conservatives. There's no success story really they can talk about. The boats is in the news for the wrong reasons again today. So it stands to reason that that Tory vote share is going to continue to decline. If that happens, if Reform then get in the lead, and they effectively become the senior negotiating partner in any kind of electoral pact, that kind of changes the game a bit, because then somebody like Tice or Farage, if he does come back, or when he comes back, if they sit round a table with Sunak or Mordaunt or Braverman, and they say, if you want to work with us and not have this election be a bloodbath, here's the conditions. And I don't know what the Conservative Party would agree to keep that grip on power. They might say, yeah, okay, like, sack off the interest payments. What's the worst that could happen? You know?
But does anyone actually see them winning seats?
Reform?
Yeah.
No, do you see the video he did of him in Ashfield on the bus? And Ben Habib also did a similar style video.
He
I
was
don't know.
standing recently in
No.
another by-election, but I don't know
He's
where
really
he's standing.
standing there for the general election, but they keep doing these videos where they keep saying the same sentence. Look at how many amazing people came out. And then you watch the video and you break it down. And it's like Ben Habib had like 10 or 12 people. I was saying he was in a pub. Ben Habib was in a pub, and he was saying how many lovely people there were. But as he's saying it's just him and a dog.
Yeah.
It's really bad. And no one's pointed this out. So whoever's doing the editing for them is doing a fantastic job from my perspective. And
Yeah.
then with the Lee Anderson and Richard Tice, again the same thing. Most of the shots are like Richard Tice trying to look like a poser in his images with the hair flailing back and that sort of broody, stupid, sexy look. And then you've got Lee Anderson with these quite funny glasses, Almost like he's trying to show that he's a different person because he's changed party so often. And then you see they both say, "Oh, there's so many people." And you look down from the bus, and there's like 20 people there, all cheering them on. And you're going,
Or
"If
them
you."
standing on some benches outside a pub, and there were like 12 people or something there. But this leads into the next question I have is like when you look at polling, they could beat the Conservatives in polling. But the problem is you need to win seats, and that polling has to, like, nationally they could be leading the Tories, but if they're not leading the Tories in any constituencies, then they're not going to win any seats.
So here's my question for anyone really, because this is something I've not really got my head around yet. So if Westminster voting intention surveys go out and the results of those surveys come back and it's like, let's say Reform 17%, Tories 17%, that to me suggests that there are 1,000 people out there who are like, yeah, I'm all about reform, and then another, like some other people over here, yeah, I'll vote Tory. How could that not then be reflected at GE level and translate as winning seats? Do you know what I
Because
mean? Like,
maybe the others can come in as well on this. Because when it comes to it depends on where those people are. So if they're in the red wall, for example, that could it won't result in a seat because what they'll end up doing is splitting the right wing vote, and it will help the Labour Party. So it's not a case of they're beating the Tories in the polls, then they're going to beat them in the general election because they have to be leading in a constituency, and it'd have to be a constituency that where Labour would not have a chance, and the choice is between Conservative and someone else. And if the Conservatives lose, then Reform would win. So Reform can be doing really well in the polls, but it seems to be maybe in the red wall, which is likely to flip back to Labour. So Reform will do pretty well, I imagine, in the red wall. But they're not going to win any seats because it's not a race between Reform and Labour. It's a race between Labour and everyone else, and they'll be splitting the right wing vote. So if the Tories actually stood aside, which Richard Tice was asking them to do, then they'd actually have a chance of winning some seats. But if the Tories are standing and Reform are standing, then they're not going to win any seats because a lot of people will say, "Yeah, I'm going to vote Reform." But then when push comes to shove on the day, they're like, I've always voted Tory, so I'm going to vote Tory this time.
But then, like, what with the war, like, if we war game this a little bit, like, if they stand candidates in all of these constituencies and the Tories, then the right vote is split, then Labour get in or Lib Dems get in, that doesn't give Richard Tice more influence to enact the right wing ultra fiscal policies that he wants to do. So it's like,
So
where's the.
there's, but I think what's going to happen is after the election, what he's going to do is he's going to use the likes of GB News and Talk TV and other outlets like that to push the Labour Party further to the right. So I think that would be the plan. So at the moment, they're trying to push the Tories. When Labour are in power, they're going to say, "Oh, look, the Labour are not dealing with the bolts. They're not bringing down inflation. They're not doing this, that, and the other." And then they're going to push Labour, and then they're going to challenge Labour. That's what they'll probably do.
It's interesting because Farage was pretty much saying that in the conference in 2023. Somewhat feels like he's the Emperor and Richard Tice is like Jar Jar Binks, the Sith Lord version of uselessness. So you've got this sort of thing that Nigel's saying is, he literally said it, "I don't expect us to win any seats. What I do expect is to create influence and then put pressure on Labour to show that all Labour's policies are just as bad as the Conservative policies." And he stated, like, for example, "I don't think they're going to stop the boats. Only the Reform Party can really do that." And so he's going to use that as an example to hit the head of the Labour Party and say, "Look, Conservatives can't do it, Labour can't do it, so now it's our chance to step in, and you should vote for us instead of any of the other parties because they're useless." But the problem is for him, you've got this youth vote coming in that's left wing as anything. It's not his demographic. You look in the background of his conference, we all know what type of person sat there. Not gonna you can go and watch yourself. Oh, I'll play the clip now. But you can make a judgment, and it's like, right, well, he's not getting the youth vote. And Lee Anderson even said it on tape, didn't he? He said he reckons Labour will bring in the the vote, but he'll bring down the voting age to 16. And he said you'll never see a Conservative government again after that, not in his lifetime. That was Lee Anderson saying that in 2023, October 23, before he joined Reform. So these are massive problems for Reform and the Conservatives, not so much for people like ourselves who just want to see them out and see society have a nice element to it.
I mean, the issue is it's the media environment, isn't it? It's so right now, and going further right, and it's so much bigger than the left that they don't have to be in power to create all of.
Oh, we lost Lisa for a moment.
Russians.
No, they don't have to be in power to create a lot of noise and to put a lot of pressure, because the tabloids and the other channels like GB News and they're going to put the pressure on for them with Labour. And I just think Labour are already, pulling back a bit from some of their policies because of this pressure. So that's where the pressure is going to come from. It's from the media, and they're just basically pushing the media to put that pressure on.
Max, who was it that mocked us for our invite for coming onto the Sunday roast? He's a
I
GB News presenter.
yeah, it was a guy in GB News, but I
He
don't
mocked
remember the name.
us. Why would I come on your po He said, why would I come on your Poxy podcast? And Max on his own gets higher numbers than the whole of GB News, but he doesn't have. Actually, we can get actual clarification on this, Max, once and for all. Do you have millionaire, billionaire sponsors that have a bit of a rusky accent?
Not that I know of.
Oh,
I'm using the typical Tory response to all questions. Not that I know of.
don't recall.
I can't recall.
Excellent.
I'll get back to you on that.
I mean,
So it's
just
interesting. I don't see that these new
well,
old-fashioned news outlets are going to keep up. I think we're the future. We're on YouTube. We're ahead of them, and we're getting better numbers than them already from the left. I think the younger generation aren't going to pick up the newspapers as much. They're going to be more skeptical of those newspapers because a lot of them do spout a lot of nonsense.
Well,
GB
even
News, can it really last? I think he's one of the part. I want to call it a donor. It's not a donor. One of the directors or owners of the channel spent probably what, 79 million? 75 million, I think, was the last number.
yeah, it's
That's
lost
not
a lot of money.
sustainable.
No, it's not sustainable at all. I don't think they will last,
But
GB News.
I actually have to disagree. I think they will last because their purpose is not to make money. Their purpose is to push a narrative. So I think some people have said that they will disappear, but I'm on the outside of that. I'm on the other side of that. I think they will stay there because they serve a purpose, and that purpose is to push whoever's in power further to the right, to push policies such as cutting taxes, reducing regulations, things like that. So as long as they do that, as long and they use things like the culture war or immigration as a tool, they'll stay there because that's their purpose.
What about Talk TV?
The
You got
Talk TV is
Murdoch?
different, but so I'm not really sure what happened with Talk TV. I think people who used to watch Talk TV just left it for GB News. So I think they were both of them were chasing the same audience, and GB News probably had better names like Farage or Lee Anderson or Jacob Rees-Mogg, or so Talk TV didn't have any of those people. Like you had a Piers Morgan, but he had one show for an hour or something like that once a week, or once I don't even remember. But one guy can't carry everything. So in the same way as Farage didn't carry GB News, he was doing quite well at the beginning, but then he started to lose viewers, and then they switched. Then they brought in people like Lee Anderson and Jacob Rees-Mogg and Tory MPs. Which there's a problem with that, isn't there?
It's shocking. It's absolutely shocking. This how many Tory MPs are on GB News? I can't get my head around why it's allowed. I know it's not supposed to be allowed, and there's this thing, is it a news channel? Isn't it a news channel? It is a news channel. I wrote an article about them some time ago when they got banned in the Senate, and I found the Ofcom license, and it's news.
Oh, it
It
is
says
news.
news. It is. The Ofcom license says news.
Yeah. I think it was an internet rumor that they weren't officially classed as a news channel, wasn't it? Because I went looking for that excuse. Like, where has this actually come from? And I couldn't find a source saying, Yeah, no, it's okay because we're not technically a news channel. I think it was an offshoot of that earlier thing about Fox News. They used the excuse of like, well, no, it's just entertainment, really. You shouldn't take it seriously, so they could get out of being done for misinformation or whatever it was.
It was Mog, wasn't it, that came out on Twitter and said, "Old fashioned is usually good, but Ofcom is antediluvian," which essentially means he doesn't believe that there should be any checks and balances like they had in the Victorian age.
Yeah, I mean, I think like so. There's a lot of things that need to change, obviously, in the UK. I'd like to see us getting closer to Europe again. I'd like to see the voting age drop to 16. I'd like to see proportional representation in, but probably as important as any of those, ideally in the first Labour Parliament, would be press reg. So that then when you do have like right wing voices, majority right wing newspapers in majority right wing newspaper review segments, setting the tone, setting the agenda, that then in that first parliamentary term or second parliamentary term of Labour, that the critique being launched from GB News or Talk TV or Nick Ferrari in the morning is actually not so much of an issue because it's no longer this dominant force pushing Labour to adopt a more right-wing narrative. It's more, you know, reasonable, measured, intelligent, instead of this endless hysterical, just like hectoring, like banging the war drum about immigrants every 2 minutes. It's like, can't we just talk about fixing social care, the NHS, stopping the schools from crumbling, and the national debt? How about that?
I mean, the Reform UK candidates, I'm sure you guys have been following along on Twitter, and there's been a couple of excellent threads by an account that's just come to clear, but they're just unbelievable, some of the stuff that's coming on. I mean, one of my favorite is this, what's his name? Danny, you know, Jack Dent, Denny, and can't remember where he's standing, but he says ex-police officer, ex-prison officer, believes in law and order. The guy has been convicted of two counts of fraud and one count of theft for false expenses when he was in the police force and the prison authority.
Yeah. Wow.
He sounds overqualified.
That's one of them. And you know, they've got the other ones there who, as you're saying, talking about the fifth column, you know,
There was one. There was one candidate, I think, who was telling a woman, a black woman in Britain, he was demanding that she be deported. This was
Yeah, it
last
was
time.
Dr. Scholler, it was, wasn't it? I think it was
Right.
her. Yeah.
They were demanding Dr. Scholler be deported.
Yes.
Well, this is in their DNA as a political. Like, so when they were set up by a lady called Catherine Blakelock. And I think it was only like 8 months. Like, everyone thinks Richard Tice, Nigel Farage, it was Catherine Blakelock who set it up originally. And it was only 8 months in that somebody dug up like old tweets and stuff saying it's like the same stuff. Like, it's that is just who they are as a political force is. This sort of, I mean, you're right that I think ultimately what they're looking for is economic policies that will benefit them and, you know, potentially maybe disaster capitalists like that sort of ilk. But their lifeblood, their bread and butter is that kind of xenophobic Brexit party, bloody foreigners, like that kind of stuff. So I'd be gobsmacked. I'd be floor-jawed if there weren't more candidates like this that come out over the next few days.
Oh, there definitely are. There was like Roger Ho, I think, and he was complaining, one of his was complaining about, you know, in the film The Dam Busters, the dog is named the N-word and it's changed to Trigger, event, you know, the dog. And he's complaining that the dog's name's been changed because, after all, it is a black dog. I mean,
Yeah.
where, you know,
Just
that is.
think of, but just think about it also. They have something like 600 candidates.
Yeah.
They're fielding candidates in every constituency in England, Scotland, and Wales, which is interesting that they're not fielding a candidate in Northern Ireland because for some reason. Instead, they have teamed up with the traditional unionist voice, which is probably not very well known in GB, but it's a party to the extreme of the DUP. So most
Right.
people consider the DUP pretty extreme. You know, their former leader believed that the Earth was 6 to 10,000 years old and that dinosaurs didn't exist. But there's a party even more extreme than them, and they're called the Traditional Unionist Voice. They only have one member in the Northern Ireland Assembly, but they have teamed up with Reform UK. So I'm not sure what's going to happen there if there was a suggestion that the TUV would try to field candidates in GB, which would
Yeah.
be hilarious.
Well, if the Russians want to donate, that's the way to do it, because that's what they did
Maybe.
with the DUP at Brexit. They got 250K, which they then slapped into Metro newspaper in London to make up falsehoods about Brexit.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because there's a little, because you're not allowed to declare where the money comes from in Northern Ireland.
I really.
Yeah, because
Oh,
of
because of
past
history,
history.
historical reasons.
Yeah. I was just saying, like, while we're on the subject of the reform candidates being exposed for, you know, previous social media activity, I do think it's really interesting. So, like, these candidates, this all surfaced today and yesterday, right? And there was a conspicuous silence about reporting it on Sky News and BBC. It was just I just saw it on Twitter. I didn't see it anywhere else. And I, like, there's something funny in that for me. It's like if Labour have a candidate who is exposed for spouting anti-Semitic conspiracy theories at some meeting like a couple of years ago, everyone's just like, wow, that is okay, that's not on, and they immediately eject him. If the Tories are found with a candidate who said like some unfortunate things, then they're like, oh, okay, well, that's not, I mean, that's really unacceptable, guys, that's actually quite shocking, then they get rid of him. If reform candidates are found to have shared or written Islamophobic content or whatever, they either poach the Islamophobe from the Tories, or when stuff like this comes up, everyone just goes, well, yeah, I mean, it's a reform guy, there's no story
I
there.
know, and Richard Tice, you know, trying to say he's going to sue the BBC for calling them far right. I mean, the evidence abounds everywhere. You know, the thing is with Farage and Tice, they're very clever. They're quite intelligent. They know exact boundaries, what they can and can't say. They're not idiots. You know, Tice is he's an unusual man. You know, I mean, I found myself on meetings with Richard Tice, believe it or not. The first time I was just, because,
Wow.
I mean, an anti-Brexit, pro-European campaigner for years, but they want proportional representation, and Remain in Spain, where members of votes make votes matter. So we have meetings, and he's there on occasion. So yeah, and he's a very almost comes across gentlemanly, you know, has this kind of aura about him. I mean, obviously, when you see him on TV, he's just talking utter shite about everything. You know, you can pick everything apart. You know, he falls apart like a cheap suit with any scrutiny. But he's a strange character. You know, but they're smarter. I think they've got, hundreds of MPs are not that smart. But I would imagine now all of Reform candidates are deleting their social media accounts as we speak.
Well,
Well.
if they're capable of doing such a thing.
Yeah.
So there's a reform candidate for my town, like local constituency, and I saw Marina Perkis share some stuff and Otto English share some stuff. And I think Otto had said, you know, she go and, like, out to his Twitter following, go and seek out your reform candidate and just have a little look at their past. So I, you know, duly did do exactly that. And interestingly, yeah, the first like 3 years of his Twitter history, gone. Like, joined in 2009, first tweet is like 2013. And I'm like, ooh, what have we here? You know, there's got to be something to it, right?
Yeah,
Sure.
no one normally does that
It's
normally.
well,
Although I
imagine from 2013 you'd find some interesting stuff.
well, I had a quick scan through. I put a few buzzwords in just in case he had said something, you know, really unfortunate, but no luck yet.
going to vote for him though, right?
No, I mean, he seems clean. He seems clean and decent enough. Yeah, he's got my vote.
But just on the topic of voting and political parties, so it's come out on Friday that, sorry, on Thursday that Owen Jones has quit the Labour Party. So I wonder what people's opinions are of on that. Alex, what do you think?
He's always been a Corbynite, hasn't he? So I'm not that surprised. I mean, they're so middle of the road, which means they're not going to have much of a mandate. The Lords can really challenge them all the way through if the Lords want to. So, I mean, to be fair, we haven't seen the manifesto, but maybe Owen Jones has, because I mean, we're getting to that point, aren't we, that it's going to be out and completed by now, because they've got to be prepped for it to come out. The manifesto's got to be prepped for the general election. Everyone keeps thinking it's May. Now we think it's October. Likelihood is that it's going to be January. So maybe Owen Jones has got a whiff of what's in it and not liked it and sort of confirmed his suspicions and he's disappeared. He's just gone, you know what? Let's go for the Green Party. And to be fair to the Green Party, they haven't really, I mean, I haven't seen their manifesto recently, but previous years, it's as socialist as it gets, but with a huge green element to it. So I could see why he's defected. It's not too shocking for me, to be honest. And let's be honest, Labour haven't exactly. He's been steady on the ship. I mean, the whole stuff that went on last week with the racism and not giving Diane Abbott a platform and none of the Labour Party giving a platform in PMQs. No one's sort of stepping aside and going, we've just talked about this lady and she's not been able to speak. I mean, that didn't go down well. The stuff that he went and did with the SNP the week before, which seems very dodgy, but I don't think anyone's really got to the bottom of. Maybe that's just, straw that broke the camel's back, as it were. What do you think, Aid?
Yeah, I'm sort of in the same camp as you with this. I would have expected this to happen at some point. It's not hugely shocking to me that he would have bailed this close to the GE. I saw a few tweets earlier from people saying this is him lining up his post-election grift. Like he leaves the Labour Party now in a bit of a tantrum, and then after the GE, when Labour don't deliver on X, Y, and Z, then he's in a good position to then continue to produce content criticizing them from afar. I don't know if I think that it's that conspiratorial. I mean, he's been fairly outspoken against Labour for a while. I mean, I personally stopped reading his stuff when he wrote two tweets on Twitter, and I don't know if they were subtweets definitely directed at me, but like they seemed to come suspiciously after I had put some stuff up, like where I'd used like compound swear words like fucktastic and cockwomble and something or other. And like within 5 or 10 minutes after me saying that, he put some sort of criticism up about people with very like middle of the road, milquetoast opinions who use compound swear words and think swearing is edgy. And I was like, should I, is this, am I, is it my ego telling me that he's talking about me, or is this like a bit weird? So yeah, I was like, well, he obviously doesn't like the swearing, so I'll leave him be.
Have you
Keep
ever
it on
met him?
him. Never met him. No, I know people who have met him, and I'm sure he's a lovely guy. I'm sure his heart's in the right place. But I don't think our content, I don't think there's much overlap in the way that we do politics.
Lisa,
Lisa.
I don't pay him a lot of attention, to be honest with you. It's like he's one of those guys where he's a bit of an enigma to me, and I know that he's very much a Corbynite, so he's very to the left. But I've always found that since Corbyn went, that group of Labour, of that left Labour, they've done nothing but moan. You know what I mean? It's I there's a part of me, because he's always complaining. It's not like he's complaining now, it's been since Corbyn left. There's a part of me who just thinks you're a bit of a disloyal bastard. You know what I mean? Just, try and change things from within and
Yeah.
and do something more positive. I don't know. I understand that he's further to the left and he wants to push the Labour Party back further to the left, more socialist. But I don't know. To me, he's a bit lefty.
Is
It's not a bad thing to say. You know,
no.
he's yeah. I
Just
just
to
find
expand
it.
on that.
Can I say something on this? Because I might be in a way defending Owen Jones. So maybe Owen will be listening to this and he might come on the podcast. No, but I think so. What in the he posted a video on social media about this, and it was about 20-minute long video or 25-minute long video. And I do recommend listening to it because he makes some very interesting points and very valid points, in my opinion. So he talks about how Starmer had made pledges before he became leader. He said that he was a friend of Jeremy Corbyn, and then he said, no, I was never friends with Jeremy Corbyn. He said that he supported Corbyn, then he said, no, I didn't support Corbyn. So he now some people would say, well, that's just that's just politicking. You have to play the game like in Game of Thrones or whatever. But I can understand many people who trusted in Starmer to carry on, to continue the Labour legacy, and they feel betrayed by that. And I think if you listen to what Owen Jones said, he feels very betrayed. So it wasn't a huge surprise. And now my disagreement with him would be that I think if you want change, it has to come when Labour are in power. So and I've talked about this before. If you look at what's happened to the Tories with UKIP and the Brexit Party and now with Reform UK, what's happening is the Tories are worried about losing power. So at this next general election, the focus will be on getting rid of the Tories. So the focus is on the incumbent. You can try and steer Labour in different directions. Say, well, you know, we should try and force them to support rejoining the European Union or proportional representation or things like that. And I agree with that. I think it's a good idea. It's a good approach. But the real change will happen is when they're in power. So when they're in power, then the by-elections will start coming up. The next general election will come up, and if their focus will be on maintaining power. And I think that's the time when you start to really have an influence, because then you start saying, okay, if you don't support proportional representation, we're going to support a party that will. We're going to split the vote. So splitting the vote isn't going to happen now because people are just focusing on the Tories. So I think when Labour are in power, if you want them to rejoin the European Union, you have to say, okay, if you're not going to support it, we're going to support, we're going to start a campaign against you. We're going to start factions within the Labour Party, like the ERG, like the, you know, the headbanger groups, all those families. So I think that's the way to do it, not before the general election when the focus is on the Tories, but after. So I think it's I and you know, we'll probably get some feedback from people on this, but I think what Owen should have done is said, okay, when Labour are in power, that's when we start to try and shift them in the direction that we want them to go, because he does have influence. He's a pretty big person on social media. I don't know how much influence he has in the Labour Party itself, and I don't know how many people he's going to be able to convince to vote against Labour. But it's Labour are going to win, so he's not going to be able to stop that. But he could do some change. He could make some change if he formed a faction within or threatened, you know, to campaign out, you know, against Labour at the following election.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it sort of it echoes a lot of the arguments for tactical voting there. It's like you can stand on the sidelines and kind of heckle Labour if you want, but it's a first past the post system. So at least if Labour get into power, you have a seat at the table as a influential member of the Labour Party, right? If you exclude yourself from that and it still becomes the Labour government, you're now completely removed from the conversation, right? Like there's You're not going to have the same power and influence within a Labour government if you've already kind of drawn a line in the sand ahead of time. Although I completely
But
take it.
I also understand why people would say, look, I'm not joining a party that supports genocide in Gaza, or I'm not supporting a party that doesn't believe in rejoining the European Union, or I can't support a party that, you know, and then you can list off a whole list the whole list of problems with the Labour Party at the moment. So I understand people voting based on their conscience, saying, look, I can't support this. But as you said, yeah, if you're if when Labour are in power, that's the time when you have real influence. That's the time when you can push them, because like Reform, what Reform are doing to the Conservatives now. The Conservatives are, okay, how can we keep Reform voters on our side? They're desperately afraid of Reform. They were desperately afraid of the Brexit Party
But
in 2019.
that's the so there's two things to that. One, if you're on the outside and you're able to galvanize a group and make them impactful on the Labour vote, you can argue that that party will then take on board those ideas. So if Owen switches allegiance to the Green Party, it can get them sorting out their media. And it is, I mean, I hardly hear anything from them. YouTube, Twitter, I just don't see it. I'm not sure why. Maybe it doesn't come up on my feed. Or maybe it isn't good enough. And you're sort of going, you can then have that impact on with first past the post, because the swing vote is normally so small. You can actually go, ah, you better listen to some of these ideas. And if they're a savvy party, they would take those ideas on board to collect those votes. So there is an interesting system within first past the post that's very nuanced, that can actually be quite effective. And it's the same with the US presidential election, which we can switch into. Ross Perot did this. In the 1990s, it was George Bush versus Clinton, and Ross Perot came in and basically hammered the Republican vote because he took away from it. And it what happened in the next election was that the Republicans took on board Ross Perot's ideas. So even though he
Right.
lost, he actually won in the long term. And you could say the same in the UK. The other interesting thing is, why aren't the Tories having the traditionally, when you're coming up to the election period, you don't go to the extremes. You don't go far right, far left. You go centre. And that's exactly what Labour's done. And what they've done is conceded that ground. And they've switched to the far right, which is a marginal group. So you're going, these guys don't know what they're doing. Like, they really don't. And it shows on those basic principles, which you'd think you would take on board. I mean, you could argue that Sunak's somewhat trying to be centre in terms of economic policies, but social policies, there's far right. Like, you might as well be the National Front.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, once Labour in power, I mean, I hope we all hold them to account the way we do the Tories. I mean, I certainly would do and plan to. But you're right. I think we can't judge them until they are in power, because I think, like you say, Al, they've tried to kind of claim the centre ground, particularly since Corbyn and Starmer came in, and he has built that party up. I mean, he's been hugely helped by the incompetence of the Tory party, obviously. But he's taken that party. People were saying, oh, it's going to be a generation, it's going to be, they're not going to be back in power for this long, for this long. So I think he's done that partly by trying to maintain that right, trying not to talk about Brexit too much, trying, to keep things evenly. But I hope that once he gets into power, he'll be a little bit more radical. That I hope, and why I mean radical, I mean, start talking about PR, really start moving closer to Europe, and as much as we can within the current framework, anyway. But we will have to see.
So it's going to be difficult because it'll all depend on what he puts in the manifesto. And if it's not in the manifesto, then the Lords can challenge it. And Boris and all those other morons have like thrown in loads of right wingers into the House of Lords. So it's a bit difficult to see what will take place if it just all depends on the manifesto. I assume he's just going to go as centre as possible. A lot of people would say his rhetoric's centre right. It's not centre left. So,
So
Christ, why on
some of
earth did he come out and back Maggie Thatcher? Why, there was
the
literally no reason to do that. Like that, there's no political savviness in that.
no.
And it beggars belief. It begs all. I mean, the only other thing he could possibly do is start extolling the virtues of Donald Trump. Segue.
Segue.
Haven't said that in a while. Donald Trump, who do you prefer? Max, give the other two a second to think.
Sorry, say
Do you
Kevin.
want Biden, who seems like he's a empathetic guy, but not all there, or do you want Captain Chaos? Oh, that's a new term. Maybe we should
There
spell that.
was a Biden video that was published on social media a few days ago where Trump was like going, "Do you want, remember how good things were 4 years ago?" And then what they done was they run all these clips of COVID and empty supermarket shelves and people rioting, stuff like this. And I think it was a good video because it you need to remind people of what exactly what took place when Trump was in charge. So, do people want stability or do they want chaos? And I think people want stability. So I still stick with this idea that Biden will win it. Still we're still waiting for, the polling and stuff like that. But I think at the end of the day, people are going to look at the economy. Yeah, the economy is doing the US economy is doing a lot better than most other economies. So, but it's all about perception. It's about whether people actually feel, because there's one thing is saying that the economy, the Tories say all the time, the economy is doing really well. It's not doing really well, but it's about how people feel. And I think a lot of Americans are not so sure that they feel the benefits of economic growth, and if they're not, then they may kick Biden out. I think it will always come down to that, how people perceive the economy. And I think this election would be really weird because we're not getting somebody new. So it's normally an in the incumbent versus the newcomer, but Trump was already there, so it's almost like an incumbent versus another incumbent. And I'm not sure how people are going to vote on that.
Well, he said it's going to be a bloodbath if he loses. There's an
Well,
incentive to vote
technically,
for him.
I think, and just to correct,
Go on.
not to defend what he said, but I think he was talking something about cars or
Our
electric cars or
university,
something.
was going to face bloodbath at
But
least.
so I don't think it was in relation to a literal bloodbath.
Let me tell you something to China. If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it.
So we also have to
Hammering
be
it.
careful of that. Like we tend to hate Trump, but sometimes the media will try to spin things against him in a way that's unfair. In a
There's
not
an element
very
of that. He did wind up a crowd and launch them at Congress.
Sure.
In an attempted coup. I mean, you know, is it that? Yeah, I guess I think we were teaching a lesson on Hitler, on the rise of Hitler. I was pointing out in this documentary they were exaggerating stuff that clearly didn't happen.
But also,
the point
Democrats.
Being is, why do you have to add nastiness to someone who is already Mr. Nasty?
But a big problem the Democrats dealt with in, like, really badly they dealt with Trump the first time around was just kept banging on about Russia. Well, yes, there was Russian influence, but they just kept saying Russia, 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 Russia. And this pissed off ordinary voters. And they were like, OK, yeah, whatever. And they kicked the Democrats out of Congress the following year, I think it was. So
in the midterms, yeah.
Like they should have focused on his own corruption instead of actually just focusing on the Russian influence. Well, the Russian influence, of course, is important, and he should have been impeached over that. But there were a whole range of other problems that, you know, that I think would have hit home more with the average voter.
It's really hard because, I mean, obviously he came out on camera in front of Putin and said he backed Putin over the FBI and the CIA. I've never heard a president do that. And that's his own words. It's not, you know, insane. That's not like if he'd done that during the Cold War, he could well have been killed.
Yeah.
By...
But I think what the Democrats should have focused on, and then we'll bring in the other our guests, of course. But
sorry,
no, but I think what the Democrats should have done is, because there was a lot of corruption about, you know, taxpayer money going to him. So I think that could have been a better, you know, during a cost of living crisis, the Democrats could have focused more on that. Lisa, what's your take on Trump Biden?
Well, I think it's going to be a close race if he gets to the race, you know, if something major doesn't happen before then. But what really pisses me off is that, I mean, I know Biden's old, but he gets so much criticism for stumbling or tripping or like, oh my God, you're not going to vote for that guy. Look at him, you know, you're literally, look at the choice, people. What are you on about? You know, this guy... Okay, he might be a little bit old and he might be even losing his, you know, marbles, but going a little bit senile, but at least he listens to people around him. He uses advisors. He, you know, he doesn't denigrate their own institutions and security services or the FBI and all of this. And on the other hand, you've got this, I don't know if you know if Trump could be called, he's not senile or something wrong with him though, isn't it? He's a narcissist, he's a fascist, he's a wannabe dictator. So it does piss me off a bit when people go, oh, but Biden's just so old. Yeah, but what? Look at the other guy. You know, it should be, well, no, we have to vote. I mean, it's a bit like the Tories and Labour, isn't it? Even if you don't like Labour, you've got to hold your nose sometimes, you know, if you to get rid of the Tories. So that pisses me off. But I think if he does get into that election, I think it's going to be closer than people think. And I just pray that he does not get in. You know, I've heard some people, I can't remember who was on Rest of Politics. Someone very senior who's been around in US politics for many, many years, campaign manager for many people going back to Bush, etc. He thinks Trump is going to get in. So it's a really worrying situation. But I would say to people, just, you know, they're both close in age. Just because he looks a bit frailer, you know, it's this kind of populist leader, isn't it? These big men, you know, who are just loud and boisterous and just obnoxious. And that put up against someone who's older and frail. Well, I would say to people, vote for the old frail guy. Come on, you know, he's not going to get...
But you made a very valid point. It's about the people. He surrounds himself with people who know what they're doing, while Trump surrounded himself with his family. Aid, what do you think?
I think I want Biden to win, quite obviously. I think that would be better for global stability. I think that'd be better for the US. I think Trump will probably get in. And there's two reasons, really, I think that. The first one is that there's been a lot of polling over key states over the last couple of weeks. And I think in each one of those key states, Trump is ahead. So I'm like, okay, well, that doesn't look great. Also, the Biden age onset of dementia narrative. Even though he had a really good speech at the State of the Union the other night, I don't imagine he's going to get less doddery between now and the election. And November's still quite a way away, so there's enough time there to make there'll be a few mishaps, a few misspeaks. He might trip over a couple more times, and that's just not going to play well when the narrative is so strong that this guy is too old to be doing that job. So there's that. That's kind of the first thing. The second thing is I actually put a bet on Donald Trump winning in 2016. And I put a bet on that Brexit was like the referendum would go in favor of Brexit. And it's not because I wanted either of those things to happen, but I developed this idea. I was just like, what is the worst thing that could possibly happen with this particular exercise? And in Brexit or with Trump and Clinton, I was like, that is the worst result. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put 50 quid on it actually happening. And then at least then when it definitely does happen, at least I've made
something.
130 quid or something out of it. You know, it's like a bit of sugar to help the medicine go down. So, on the basis that the worst possible outcome in that election could be that Donald Trump gets back into the White House, I think that's probably what is going to happen. Sorry to be a bummer.
No. It's understandable. I mean, he's already won once. Why not again? And, Biden, as you said, the message of the economy, the Americans don't seem to understand, or at least the impression I'm getting from the videos that I'm seeing about American public, don't seem to get they're actually doing all right economically compared to the rest of the world.
It's a similar sort of issue, I think, that's replicated across other economies, where they get back to growth. Corporations are making a lot of money. The FTSE, the NASDAQ seem to be going up and up and up. Lots of rich people are making even more money, basically. But if you are a single mother of three kids living in a trailer park, or if you are a widower father and you've got a couple of kids and you're struggling and you've got to pay childcare and medical bills over there and everything, how are you going to experience that growth? How is that going to impact you and how you feel about the economy? It's just not, especially in America, with how kind of, you know, neo-Victorian a lot of their society and, you know, their aversion to socialism actually is in the modern day. So it doesn't surprise me at all when people say, you know, they've got back to growth. They're like 4% GDP this year growth on their GDP. I'm like, yeah, but nobody's going to feel that if the only people that are actually benefiting from it are, you know, your Elon Musk's, Jeff Bezos. Like, it's a story that needs to, you know, like what we actually need. We need the trickle down economics to actually work.
It's called socialism.
Good luck with that.
It doesn't work, but the Democrats keep choosing terrible candidates. I mean, you know, like Hillary. You know, like you could have anyone else, probably someone fresh, and they would have beaten Trump. You know, Hillary was just going to be the stick that was going to be used to be bashed. You know, and now, okay, Biden. Term one, I was convinced he wouldn't run for a second term. I, like everyone else, thought, you know, he'll come in for 4 years, things will calm down, and someone else, maybe Kamala, maybe someone else will run second term. I was really surprised when they put him forward for a second term because of his apparent aging, you know, and dithering, is that what we call it? I don't like to say that, but yeah. But I just think, pick better candidates. It's Trump, you know? It's just...
Saying Michelle Obama might go for it, and I was like, really? Like, another? Because even though I like Michelle Obama and I think she's a great speaker and she's got charisma, I think that's half the battle really in American politics, but I am still very much in that camp of thinking, like, Are you seriously telling me the best candidate, or like the only person you could field against this narcissistic sociopath, is the wife of the guy that already did it before? Is there nobody, like, is the talent pool that shallow, really?
The Tory party.
Right, yeah.
Scrape in the barrel.
Well, if you'd like to see Michelle Obama or Owen Jones or Alan Lickman on the show, click the like and subscribe. Otherwise, yeah. We're out. Thank you so much, guys. That was a great show.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Be sure to tune in next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.